start. The universe to Mars, I'm connected.
Don't matter how stormy the day, he will play your Did you know your name and date of birth speak volumes about you as a person and as a spiritual being? Well, your personal numerology can shine a light on your life's purpose, your true potential, and give you insight about your soul's journey in this lifetime. Join Allison Bachman, host of Visible by Numbers, Monday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, as she unlocks the secrets of how to live a happier, healthier, and more purposeful life by using numerology as a guide. You'll be inspired by Allison's passion, her amazing on-air readings, insightful topics, and guests. You don't want to miss Allison's show Monday nights on BBS. Visit Allison at www.visiblebynumbers.com for more information. Be well.
Welcome to the People Speak. I'm your host, Malik Johnson. And today joins us the prodigy, the world-class Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt gold medalist and former UFC welterweight champion, BJ Penn. Thank you, BJ, for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
BJ, you haven't put anyone in a rear neck. Are you there, BJ?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. You haven't put anyone in a rear neck choke move lately, have you?
Yeah, probably training. I started training again, so maybe the other day.
Maybe the other day. You know, it was that move that jumped you in a weight class and you defeated the five-time defending welterweight champion, Matt Hughes, in less than 4 minutes, was it not, in the first round?
Yep. 4 minutes into the first round.
And ironically, this move was used by Matt Hughes to defeat Frank Trigg in their second fight. Nevertheless, I would like to start this discussion, BJ, with you as a fighter and transition it to a broader fight regarding the indigenous people of Hawaii. For those who may be unfamiliar with mixed martial arts, BJ, I was wondering if you can give the listeners a brief description of precisely what this art consists of and how it began.
Mixed martial arts is it's a martial art. Well, I guess it started off as style versus style, and then it kind of molded into everybody started doing all the styles and mixing them all together. And so you basically got striking for your stand-up martial arts, wrestling for your takedowns, wrestling and judo for your takedowns, and jiu-jitsu for your groundwork, which is what happens after you get taken to the ground. And that's the sport of mixed martial arts, usually held in a ring or a cage.
How did you get involved in sport?
I was just hanging around the neighborhood, and some taekwondo instructor named Tom Callis moved like five houses down from me, and he would always see the kids in the yard boxing and having a good time and stuff, and he kind of just he kept trying to find out. He wanted us to see if we could. He did a couple jiu-jitsu lessons. He wanted to see if we would come and work roll around with him, and I was like, what for? You know, I don't need jiu-jitsu. I didn't really know what it was. And then he kept asking my dad, and then finally my dad was like, you know what, just go once, you never got to go again. I was like, okay. So I went down, and the guy tapped me out, choked me out, arm locked me, and then I was like, man, this is some good stuff. And ever since that day, my mind just started going and kind of never stopped.
Well, you know, of course, and you've done great in this particular field. In fact, you brought a great degree of pride to many Hawaiians when you defeated Matt Hughes. What was that?
Huh?
What was that like?
Yeah, you know, there really isn't, you know, it's Hawaiians, they really don't have that much to look up to, you know, especially on television. You know, everything you're going to see, I mean, you're never going to really see too many Hawaiian people up there, you know, and you know, Hawaiians are a dying race, you know, I mean, who knows how many pure Hawaiians there are left, you know, and all that kind of stuff, and kind of, Hawaiians are kind of like, you know, kind of got spread out from their own culture and stuff, and don't really speak the language and stuff to each other, so, you know, it really does feel good to me to kind of, you know, get all the Hawaiians back into Hawaiian pride and back into, you know, believing in themselves as a race and as a culture.
What was really remarkable about that year that you, in fact, defeated Matt Hughes, many people compare this to your...
You're kind of cutting out a little.
Oh, I do apologize. Hopefully the engineers
okay,
will
okay,
fix
perfect,
that.
Okay, perfect, perfect. You're
fine?
Perfect now. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. You know, in the year 2004 at the UFC 46, when you defeated Matt Hughes, many people, many African Americans, many minorities in America, looked at you and saw another Joe Louis. And I don't know if you're familiar with Joe Louis, but he did pretty much the same thing when he was fighting the German, a German boxer. He brought a lot of pride to many people who didn't get to see themselves or people like them in very respectable ways. And so that's one of the reasons why I would like to tailor this discussion and talk about the native Hawaiians, if you don't mind. But before I do so, you were on the reality television show, The Ultimate Fighter 5, weren't you?
Yeah, that was a great experience, you know, to go and, you know, film something like that and be a part and see how a reality show gets put together. So that was awesome. It did get tough after a while, you know, dealing with the different personalities and the different things that were going on the show, but all in all, I'm glad I did it. I'm glad it's over, you know. It was cool.
Yeah, well, in episode one, I remember that you had asked the fighters of 16 to raise their hands if they wanted to join your team and had nothing to do with the coach of the other team. And 10 of the... 10, what happened? 10 of the five did what?
Yeah, that, you know, I mean... You know how that whole thing came up was like, I was at my apartment the night before and I was looking at everybody's picture and trying to think about them and evaluate them, and then I was like, you know what? I want to know. It's not who I want to train. I mean, for me it wasn't about. I want to pick the guy who's going to win the whole thing. You know, I really wanted to do a good coaching job, and really I wanted to see who really wanted to work with me, who needed my help, who needed what I had to offer to get you to be the ultimate fighter, you know, and that's kind of how that whole thing came up, because, you know, if you want a guy who wants to work with you, you know, so I wanted to just see who wanted to work with me, but it ended up making Jens a little pissed off or whatever, but, you know, that's what really how that all came about. I wanted to know who was down with Team Penn, and you know what I mean? You're either with us or against us, you know?
And on June 23rd, 2007, you defeated Jens.
Yep. That was a fight long time coming, and I just, you know, 5 years, you know, like when I rewatched the tape, and at the time I wasn't thinking it, you know what I mean? I was just like, keep fighting and you know, just because I fight the fight and rewatch the tape, you know, like when I finally mounted him in the end, you know, that was just like what I was waiting to do for like 5 years, you know, just get it over with and just leave it all in the ring, and me and Jens can walk out and everything's done.
Well, that yet was again one of the moments that I think many Native Hawaiians found great pride. And there was another moment on that show. You wore a shirt that read, Hawaiian Knowledge, Unity, Sovereignty. About that in particular, for some listeners, there is a Hawaiian sovereignty movement, a movement that seeks self-determination and self-governance for Native Hawaiians. Are you familiar with that particular movement, BJ?
Yeah, I mean, growing up over here in Hilo, Hawaii, you know, there's a lot of Hawaiian immersion schools that people teach the language and all kinds of different things. And, you know, it's not really hard to find over here in Hilo, you know, a movement like that. One of the outlying islands, you know what I mean? That it's not really, you know what I'm saying? It's not really, well, Honolulu is where all the action is. And it's not really to find that type of movement it's not really that hard to find that type of movement or that type of talk around an island like this, you know.
One of the such movements are seeking the redress from the United States as its role in the 1993 overthrow of the Queen. I believe her name is Liliʻuokalani. Do you believe in redress as well?
You know, there a lot of different people talk about a lot of different things, you know, but you know, you got to be careful when you talk about, I got to be careful when I talk about that kind of stuff, because yeah, I want to talk to a lot of the other Hawaiians, you know, and other people out there, you know what I mean, and talking with them and find out what is the will of the whole people. I kind of just stand up there, you know, and say certain things, and because I really want to be the whole Hawaiian people all together and all kind of have a voice to speak on something, you know.
Well, out of curiosity, out of curiosity, who are you in particularly speaking to? For instance, I know that there is Mililani Trask, who's out there, and there's David Keanu Saad, or David Saad is.
You know, that's something all the Hawaiians would have to sit down and talk about together. You know what I mean? I'm only one Hawaiian. I don't deserve the right, you know what I mean, without talking to all the other Hawaiians to even voice an opinion on what way the Hawaiian people should go, you know, in the first place. That's the key, the unity, the sitting down with the Trask or with the other people or any of these other people out there. And sitting down and talking and everybody putting everything together collectively, whether it is even if it is the state funded OHA, sitting in those same meetings and everybody, but you know, as long as it's Hawaiians there for the betterment of Hawaiian culture and Hawaiian people.
Out of curiosity, what would you do if you have a magic wand and you can make the decision? What would you do?
Well, to me, I feel Hawaiians need some kind of land base in Hawaii, you know, where they can make their own laws and do their own thing. And with the self-determination magic wand, we would have the best schools I could ever imagine, you know, that the kids want to, the schools are so unbelievable. The kids want to be there all day. The best hospitals, you know, probably right by the beach. So there's some kind of hope of life when you go into a hospital like that. You're talking about a magic wand, huh? You know what I mean? And we have our own pier where we do, you know, just everything, you know, just a magic wand, you know, it definitely starts with the best education, you know, that's the key to the whole thing.
You as the prodigy, you are famous for the rear neck choke. If you had a magic wand and you could place the United States in a rear neck choke, what would that look like politically?
No, you know, I mean, to me, I'm not really an anti-American. I'm more a pro-Hawaiian kind of person. You know, I don't want to look back at the past and they did this to us, they did that. I just want to look to the future, you know, and just, you know, just kind of take care of the Hawaiians and what we can do and achieve as a people.
So in your future, you foresee that the Hawaii stays within the states and the Union of the United States. That is what you would want.
No, I don't know either way because honestly I haven't talked to enough of the Hawaiian people out there because I'm sure they are going to be stupid. They got to come to some kind of vote. You know, I don't know where my support would be either way right now. But I do believe that the Hawaiians need some kind of land base and some kind of recognition. I don't know if it's tribal recognition or what it may be. But they need some kind of land base where they can make their own laws and start, exactly like you said, self-determination.
You were talking about a vote. Currently, before Congress, the Native Hawaiian Government Reorganization Act of 2007, it's Senate 310, House H.R. 505. Basically, are you familiar with this particular bill by your senator?
That's the Akaka bill, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I've heard about that a few times over the years growing up around Hawaii.
And the Akaka bill basically proposed between 2000 and present to seek to establish a process for Native Hawaiians to gain federal recognition similar to Native American tribes currently in the United States of America. Do you support that?
That's a tough bill. You know, because you got one, some Hawaiians on one side saying that's not the true sovereignty. We'll really lose everything if we go that way. But then you got nothing on the other side. You know, there's really not a whole lot on the other side. And that new reorganization that's going to come is going to be probably a state-funded, you know, entity. So you know, that's just, you know, I'm just sitting down looking at that. I mean, you know, I just try to, all I try to do is just understand it as best as I can. You know, I mean, that's what you got there. You're going to have a new organization that's going to be controlled by the state. So how much power do you have? But then again, on the other side, you got nothing. So, you know, that's just a bill to look at and to try to understand, you know, what's the lesser of two evils and, you know, try to just, you know, see what happens.
One of the things that really concerns me is the Native Hawaiians who I agree with you. Many times they're losing their culture. Do you think that the Office of Hawaiian Affairs created 1978?
What's that? Could you repeat, please?
Yes. Do you think that the Office of Hawaiian Affairs, that was created in 1978, has helped the Native American, the Native Hawaiians?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's better. It's better than nothing. You know. It's better than nothing, you know. That's the thing that's hard, because you got both of those sides where people say that they didn't do anything, but then at least they did a little, or you know, at least they did whatever they could, or whatever they say they could, you know. Who knows or whatever, but yeah, that's. Hey, what was the question again? I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. It may be some sound problems there, BJ. BJ, do you mind if we take a 2-minute break?
No worries.
To fix this sound problem. Thank you. We're going to be right back, everyone. We're going to take a 2-minute break, and we are going to resolve any type of engineer problems. Thank you for joining us. We are here with BJ King, the Prodigy. I know I've been throwing some tough questions at you.
What's that?
I've been throwing some tough questions at you, I know.
Yeah, you have, huh? You have been throwing some tough questions. Well, that's all right.
But that reassures me that you truly are a fighter. You know, Clinton, on November 15th, 1993, he apologized to the Hawaiian people. And I know that the Hawaiian government... the governor has apologized as well. Do you think that is at least the first move that needs to happen before anything else happens? Was that a smart move by Clinton in Hawaii?
I mean, that was a smart move for the Hawaiians, I guess, you know. That was good to get that apology.
Yeah,
I mean that recognizes something going on. There was something that happened, you know.
And that's what we wanted to do with the People Speak. We wanted to bring you, because you really are a god in Hawaii, whether you know it or not. And you would be one of the persons who could get the attention of many other Americans and also those in the international community to focus on the Native Hawaiians. And that's why we appreciate your being here. There are many individuals.
Well, That's the whole thing. I mean, the thing that breaks my heart about the Hawaiians, I mean, how much longer is it going to be till we're looking at the last Hawaiian's bones in a museum? You know what I mean? I mean, I see all this stuff. I see all this stuff all the time. Save the dolphins, save this beach. But I never, ever see anyone saying save the Hawaiians. You know, I don't ever see it. You know, it's got to be a Hawaiian who's going to say it.
And I absolutely agree. And it was just why I was wondering if you supported some of the organizations such as Dr. Keanu Tsai and such mm-hmm. as Trask and their
media. Yeah, well, that's the whole thing, you know, support all things Hawaiian, you know. That was my thinking from ever since I was a young kid, and you know, I support everything.
You pretty much support it all as long as it's for the benefit of the Hawaiians.
Without a doubt.
Well, BJ, if you don't mind, we'd like to start, and if you don't mind, we'd like to take a few calls. There are individuals from Hawaii all the way to probably France and to Africa who are listening in to this particular interview, and we'd like to take the first call. First caller is Lilani. She is a native Hawaiian, and she would like to ask you a question as well. BJ, thanks a lot. Please ask your question.
Hello?
Yes, Lilani, are you there? She may have, there may have been a problem there. Let's go with the next caller, shall we? We'll go with Leilani, are you there? There she is. She's
aloha,
here.
Kawa, there, BJ Penn, Leilani, Obao Koenoa, Pehe Oi. I'm very proud of you, BJ Penn.
Thank you very much.
Of what you stood for that evening as you entered the ring.
Oh,
and
that's
the music
right,
that you decided to use as you entered that ring. Of course, you know, as a native Hawaiian, we have this inner pride when we hear music from Brother Iz, Israel Kamaka,
yeah.
For some of you in the radio world. There are two things that I look forward to and I take pride in, and that's my heritage, my culture. I, for one, mm-hmm. though, BJ, I am one of those, BJ, I'm one of those who stands on the side with David Keanu Tsai looking for independence.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw you walking into that ring, I took nothing but pride as you being a native Hawaiian, and then watching that bout, watching how quickly you finished that fight.
Oh,
I rose out of my seat, and I'm sure 3-4 blocks down the road they could hear me screaming. But I appreciate what you've done, and I appreciate you getting the message out. I only look forward to hearing you speak more about native Hawaiians and our plight. And the fact that there's only 5,100% pure Hawaiians left on the face of this earth.
Yeah, that breaks my heart.
Native Hawaiians are being pushed out of their own land on a regular basis because finances and the cost of living in Hawaii is so expensive that Native Hawaiians cannot survive on their own homeland. And the fact that the laws that have been placed on the books in the state of Hawaii have been against Native Hawaiians and not pro-Hawaiian. BJ Penn, if you had the opportunity to stand with David Keanu Tsai in a call for independence from the United States of America, would you do so?
Thank you.
I don't know that guy. Like, I don't know him personally.
Thank you. We'll go ahead and go with the next speaker. The next speaker, next caller, actually, is Mike from California. Mike, please ask your question of our guest.
Hello?
Yes, Mike, are you there? Mike from California.
Hello. Hello, BJ. My name is Mike. I was wondering if you could tell us something about the Gracie family. That you lived and
trained.
Did you live and train with them? You know, what, what is your relationship with them this day? Are you still in touch with them, et cetera? Thank you.
Thank you.
The Gracie family is awesome. They brought they they refined Brazilian, they refined jiu-jitsu and turned it into Brazilian jiu-jitsu, spread it throughout Brazil. And I got the chance to train under Ralph Gracie when I was younger, and train under I trained at Gracie Baja, trained at some different bases, but yeah, the Gracies are awesome, great competitors. You know, their name says it all, and you know, we don't talk too much anymore from today, but I respect them. I got a lot of respect for them, even though I don't really talk to them anymore.
Thank you, caller. Mike from California, we have another caller here for you, BJ. It is Andy. Andy from Ontario, Canada. Please ask your question of BJ.
Hello?
Yeah, we're having a little difficulty there, BJ. Here
hey,
is Andy.
BJ. Sorry to take a great fight against Jens Pulver. Two questions for you, actually. What's next for you in the Octagon, and what are your feelings on George St. Pierre and the Parisian fight coming up very, very soon? I'm just kind of curious.
Okay, what was the first question?
The first question was, what's next for you? What's coming up next?
Okay, I think I'm supposed to be fighting Shirk in November. And then sometime around November, me and Shirk, I think. And then, who is St. Pierre fighting? Is he fighting Koscheck or is he fighting Parisian?
Yeah, actually, Andy has gone. He's hung up, so I'm not exactly sure.
Okay, yeah, it's hard to hear. I can't even hear what the people are saying. A little.
I apologize for that. They were probably having still some technical difficulties, but I think the caller wanted to know what are your feelings on George St. Pierre?
Oh yeah, he's a good fighter in good shape. I think since he got that that knockout from Matt Serra, I think he's going to come back and be stronger than he was before.
We have another caller. And, you know, you are very popular, BJ. I wanted to tell you that. You're not only popular in Hawaii, obviously, you're popular all over the place. We have Basima, who is the co-host of People Speak Radio. She has a question from you. She is from Michigan. Please ask your question, Basima. Basima, are you there? Apparently, the caller is having some slight difficulty. Let me ask you, BJ. BJ, you lost to Matt Hughes. I know that's one of your desires. You want to win again, the UFC. When do you expect to be triumphant?
When do I expect to fight Matt Hughes again?
Yes.
I don't know. I got Shirk in November. I know I'm going to fight Matt Hughes for sure I'll fight him again before I retire, but, you know, I really don't want to look past this fight. You know, Sean Shirk is an amazing athlete and great fighter. He's a world champ, and, you know, I gotta take care of him first.
As you said, before you retire, may I inquire as to your age?
28 years old.
Well, do you believe that Matt, I mean, after you totally destroyed Matt the first time you fought him, do you think that Matt's terrified of you?
I don't know, you know, I don't know what runs through that guy's head, man. I think I don't know. Now, he's a fighter, he's got confidence, you know, he believes in himself. I mean, I gotta give it to Matt because he did stand there for so long and defend that title so many times. So I give him respect, whether I like him or not. But we'll see. I know we'll fight again.
Well, just out of curiosity, what goes through your head right before a fight?
I don't know, man. I'm just going in just to do my thing. I don't know if I'm blanked out or what. I think about what's going on, but I kind of cross that barrier, like. You know, there's that barrier. Once you cross it, there's no turning back. Crossing over. Crossed over. It's a fight term. I crossed over. I'm too deep already. There's no pulling out, you know. You're going to just be ready to just go anything. You could just, you know, give yourself up to death or whatever.
Well, I know, of course, you are certainly one of the most loved persons in Hawaii and the United States and, of course, internationally. I see that you are dating one of the top models in the world, are you not, BJ?
No, that's not true. That was some kind of typo thing that happened. Actually, me and that girl never met each other before.
Okay, well, we won't even announce who that individual was. That's why I said top model. I didn't mention her name. We have another caller. Oh, actually, we have the co-host for the People Speak Radio, Basima. Basima is from Michigan. She would like to try again and ask you a question. Go ahead, Basima. It's your mic.
Hello, BJ. Thanks for being with us at the People Speak Radio show. We're really pleased and honored to have such a vibrant and athletic and powerful young man. Do you feel that sometimes too much burden is placed on the shoulders of people like you as far as politics goes? And to be quite honest with you, politicizing the art, is that something that's disturbing to you? First of all, as far as I'm concerned, say it, honey. You go out there and you say it. We need young people like you. We need people that remember that there is a culture, that there is a heritage to maintain. And I know for one, being of an indigenous people of Palestine, we need more people like you. Keep it up, young man. And let me know how you feel about politicizing your work.
Yeah. No, it is kind of weird, you know, as being just being a fighter. I thought I was just going to come on and just talk about, you know, fights and fighting, and it is kind of weird. I mean, if you make one statement, I mean, people are going to start thinking about that and kind of you're going to represent that, you know. In this case, I don't mind, you know, this is something that that's really important to me. So on the other hand, yeah, it is kind of weird because you really got to, you know, you're not just doing a fight interview, you're doing a political interview, and you better be careful what you say.
Well, you know, the thing is, BJ, you are a symbol for Native Hawaiians, and many people see you as a fighter, not only for yourself, but also for Native Hawaiians as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, and I'm fine with that.
Do you compare yourself to Muhammad Ali?
No, that guy's the greatest. You know his name, he's the greatest, you know. Yeah, that's a pretty big shoes to fill.
Yep, Muhammad Ali, he very much was a political fighter, too. He didn't fight just for African-Americans. He fought for all good people. And that's how a lot of people see you, BJ. We have another caller. Actually, I don't know how this caller got to jump the line, but there's Andy again. There's Andy from Ontario, Canada. He would like to ask you another question, BJ. Andy.
Yeah, this is just going to be a quick one for you. What is the possibilities of the UFC moving into Canada and having fights here? And knowing BJ probably has communication with Dana White, is Dana White indicating anything like that? And I personally just want to thank him for coming on here. I'm a UFC fan, and this is great for me.
Oh, thanks. I wouldn't doubt it. I'm sure the UFC is going to go to Canada. I thought they were going to go when St. Pierre had the title, but maybe some things got switched up. But, I'm pretty sure about that UFC is going to be in Canada. I mean, I don't know anything from the office, but I'm pretty sure they're gonna eventually move up there. And what was the second question?
I did not get the second question either, but perhaps I can get wind of it, and I certainly will ask you. Well, we do realize that your reality television show that you were part of, I should say, did in fact have a premiere in Canada. In fact, it was at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Do you think you would do another reality television show?
Who, me?
Yes, you.
If I would do a reality television show?
Yes, if you would do another.
At the same one, the top?
Yes.
It was against a good I got a phone in, you know, like, well, I don't know, it's tough, man, that thing, you know. And but this time I'd be more ready, you know. I mean, the first thing a coach should do is ask the guy why he's there, you know. Is he there to just be on a show? Is he there to win? You know, is he there to work with you? Does he want to do it on his own and just have you stand on the side and just help him a little? You know, it's better, because if not, you're going to be stepping on people's toes. So maybe the second time I went through it, it wouldn't be as bad.
Yeah, the Ultimate Fighter 5. You know, many people enjoyed you on that, that's for sure, and you've accomplished so much being who you are. I would like to, you know, actually, my co-host, she hosts the show, she has another question for you. Vixie from Michigan, please ask your question of BJ.
Thank you, Boo. This is a very, Malik, this is a very, very nice interview. I wanted to ask you about the form of martial arts that you work with, BJ. I have, many years ago, worked in the practice of Qigong. And with Qigong, what that was not necessarily an offensive. It was almost a defensive, where you used more of your power, your energy, than actual physical force and the wrestling type jiu-jitsu that you do. Have you ever worked with Qigong? And what are your feelings about the different form of martial arts and the different kind of response that you get?
I never got to work with that martial art personally, but it sounds like a good martial art, though, you know. Wait, is it kicks and punches, or just kind of like self-defense, like Aikido?
Well, the caller has actually hung up.
Okay.
So,
Well,
let me ask you this, BJ. BJ, who did you look up to when you're practicing, and who are some of the individuals you've looked up to as far as those in martial arts?
Yeah, probably all the same, you know, Chuck Norris, Tom Brady, Van Damme, Bruce Lee, you know, anybody on TV, you know, and I was always really into, like, toys, G.I. Joes, and all kind of stuff as a kid, you know, so... Yes, any of them. Oh, and no, but yeah, I really like Hulk Hogan, actually. I was really into WWF as a kid.
Are you still a fan of the Wrestling Federation?
Yeah, I still like the wrestling, but it kind of passed me by. I like the older guys with Hulk Hogan and Macho Man and all them.
Oh, I see. I too was a fan of many of them as well. In fact, I'm around the same age as yourself. We have one last caller, if you don't mind, BJ. This is Lilani, the native from Hawaii. She would like to ask you one more question.
Yeah, sorry, Lilani. I kind of didn't get to hear your last question. I'm sorry.
Lilani, it's your mic. Please ask BJ.
Yeah,
Lilani.
No, I just wanted to know where you folks train and how long do you train for at a time. What type of... facility do you train in? What part of the Big Island are you training in? You know, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
You know,
it
do you have to be on a specific diet for your training? No, so on and so forth. I'm totally ignorant. I've watched your fights, but I'm totally ignorant on how you prepare for your fighting. And the second question, if you remember, the song that was played on your way into the ring, name of the group?
Thank you, sang that song.
It was a remake of Hawaii 78. What was the name of that group?
And the song was Hawaii 78 and E Ala E. E Ala E. You know? And then I just trained over here in Hilo. And we trained at the old Totokaka factory right downtown. We kind of have like a cage, a ring, like some weights, boxing stuff. Like a jiu-jitsu mat, kind of all in the same building. That's about it over here in Hilo. And before I go off to the fight, try to go check out King Kamehameha and Kauai, and then head on for the fight.
Thank you, BJ. BJ, you have been an exceptional guest. I really appreciate your coming. BJ, this is the Prodigy, the world-class Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt gold medalist, and the former UFC welterweight champion. BJ Penn, thank you for joining us on The People Speak.
Thank you.
You take care.
Take care. Hey, I want to thank all my fans. Thank you, and check out bjpenn.com.